Moncrief on News Talk.
Look, I know I was in two minds about all this, but I am so glad we're doing this now. Like, paying our respects properly, it's only right. And also, I could be doing with a bit of a break myself, to be honest.
Robin.
Look, things between me and Patrick have been quite difficult lately. He's become very controlling, very possessive, lots of mind games, gaslighting, that sort of thing.
That's How to Get to Heaven from Belfast. You can stream the entire first season now on Netflix. James Dempsey joins us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
So I suppose that did they have to kind of go, this isn't Derry Girls at the start to kind of make it distinct, given that there's so many, you know, familiar faces in this?
Well, I guess they did put Belfast in the title, right?
Yeah. Jesuitical difference for people outside this island, or whatever.
Yeah, like this is very much Belfast women rather than Derry Girls, right?
Yeah.
So, like, obviously, the selling point here is Lisa McGee, writer, creator of Derry Girls. So it should be noted that she had a couple of other shows made before Derry Girls was her breakthrough hit, arguably. And the thing about Derry Girls is it has built this great legacy in the short amount of time that it's been around. But when I was sort of trying to think about it, kind of, it's sort of uniquely old-fashioned in some ways as a sitcom, because it's very episodic, right? Mm. They have the characters, the three girls and James, and they fulfill sort of archetypes within the show. But like the episodes don't necessarily have this overarching storyline. I mean, the storyline, I guess, is the peace process in Northern Ireland, but it's not like that's the fifth Sex of the City character of Derry Girls, right? Yeah. So what people loved about her writing in Derry Girls was the, you know, for want of a better word, the banter between the girls. And where this show is absolutely at its best is the banter between the women. So the women are Roisin Gallagher, probably best known for her role in The Dry, the RTE drama, which she's excellent in, Sinead Keenan and Keelan Dunn. And they play Saoirse, Robin and Dara. Saoirse must be some sort of a version of Lisa McGee herself, because she's a screenwriter writing this kind of potboiler type mystery show within the show. And they are
very meta.
Yeah. And they're pulled back together when Natasha O'Keefe, who plays Greta, she was their childhood friend from the south who moved up to Northern Ireland and got up to lots of trouble and pulled them into her wake when she dies, and they are on their way to her wake, actually, in Donegal.
Okay.
And really, I'll not go into more of what the mystery is, because fundamentally, the difference between this and Derry Girls, not only in terms of duration, as this is eight roughly 50-minute parts compared to, you know, six 25-minute parts, is that this is a kind of mystery to unravel as well. Now, all in, I will say, for me, it's kind of like a solid 7 out of 10. Right. Like, okay. I found it good. I found it entertaining. But I also found that the mystery became so convoluted the longer I got into the show. I mean, in order to fill 8 hours of TV, it takes a number of twists and turns that I felt were kind of a little unnecessary, at times confusing and throwing me off the enjoyment of the show. But when it comes down to just the trio of women, Saoirse, Dara and Robin, I mean, they are brilliant together, and particularly Sinead Keenan as Robin gets probably the standout lines, the funniest, you know, the funniest biting acerbic bits. That is the kind of dialogue we're used to in the McGee universe. Mm. And I would have watched them do anything, right? Now, I mean, the show takes them all over Ireland and to Portugal for an episode or two as well. It has its kind of White Lotus season 2 moment on a yacht to some degree as well. But like, all in, I really enjoyed the universe if I didn't necessarily love the show wholeheartedly. But like, I would love to see it come back for a second season now that I have a bit better sense of who the characters are and see them take on a bit more of a straight mystery than kind of this bizarrely convoluted thing that they're doing.
Yeah, because I suppose the difference is that, like, Derry Girls had a plot, but it wasn't really driven by
the plot.
No,
not at all. No.
And the peace process was kind of background noise.
Exactly.
Anything else, and came to the foreground sometimes. Is that maybe the why it's not getting 10 out of 10 here? Because the murder mystery part of it,
For me, the murder mystery is, as I said, it's just needlessly convoluted.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, obviously you have, you know, because it's spread across 8 hours as opposed to, you know, like 3 hours, right? It just needs an awful lot of scaffolding to hold it up. So into the fray, we also get Dara Hand as Garda Leem, but also like the hunk and also, you know, mechanic when they want to put him in a pair of overalls. He plays a Garda who is involved in investigating their involvement in whatever else is going on. And then you have Brona Gallagher as Booker, who is a kind of shady character. I won't go into much. And we get the appearance of one, you know, legacy Derry Girl character. Well, not character, actress, I should say, as well. But I don't even want to go into that. You have Emmett J. Scanlon as Owen, who plays Greta's husband. He's this Irish actor who gets typecast as just baddie in everything. He just has, like, baddie face. So, like, he plays a kind of shady character as well. There's a lot of shade, you know.
Yeah.
And when the light eventually, you know, shines on the shade, it's not necessarily as satisfying as I needed it to be, given just quite how long it went on.
Yeah. Is there, and I don't want you to give us any spoilers, but is there any reason why they go to investigate whatever it is they invest? Does any of them have any investigation credentials, or are they compelled to investigate?
They're compelled to investigate because they had this childhood friendship with Greta, who has now, you know, passed away in the opening episode. Right?
Okay.
So they're on their way to her funeral in Donegal, and this pulls them back into a mystery from their own teenage years. So, like, it has some of the DNA of Derry Girls in it, in the sense that we flip between timelines of, like, you know, 20 years ago when they were in their final year of secondary school. So, you know, if you're looking for, you know, Irish schoolgirls, Northern Irish schoolgirls in a school uniform and a nun played by a Southern Irish actress, you get that here as well. So there's definitely these, like, meta references to Derry Girls as well. Not to mention the fact that at one point they are standing in front of the famous Derry Girls mural with, you know, with an alumnus Derry Girl in the cast.
Okay, that's kind of cute, really. The one texter says, that Belfast show, the plot sounds like the last Apache reunion play from 2+ decades ago. I think this was a play she wrote before, and this kind of series is loosely based on that.
Well, she is a playwright, and yeah, you know, was a playwright, I should say, well, is, I guess. And Roisin Gallagher's Saoirse plays a writer who aspires to be a playwright. And indeed, I think the last episode is the name of a dramatic term for when kind of the, I can't even remember what the word was because it's not something in my vocabulary, but it's some sort of when the revelation happens at the end of a play. So yeah, there's definitely the bones of theatre in this as well.
Right. Okay, so our next show is Reality Check, Inside America's Next Top Model. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
I've actually apologized for the issue with Danny and what happened. That was between a rock and a hard place for me, because there were agents that would tell me she will not work with those teeth. It's just not going to happen. That's what they told me. And again, I could have just been quiet and let them handle it. But that's, hindsight is 2020 for all of us. It just so happens that a lot of the things that are 2020 for me happened in front of the world.
Bull. Me getting my Gap clothes is not opening any doors for me. You knew what you were.
Bull something. I don't know what the rest of that statement was. Maybe it was some farming reference. So was Inside America's, or America's Top Next Model, had it already been known that there were scandalous things going on there?
Oh, definitely. Right. So, I mean, I take it from that conversation, you were not a regular ANTM viewer back
curiously
in the early
2000s. Much to my shame.
Well, there were 100 million viewers worldwide. So it was this massive breakthrough hit in the early years of reality TV competition. And of course, if you shine a light on the history of that industry, and it turns out it's not that ethical, and they treat their, you know, participants very, very badly. So I grew up watching America's Next Top Model as a reality TV show. I remember the cycles. I remember the winners. I remember the moments. I remember the gap tooth dentistry moment that Tyra Banks is talking about in this episode. But I haven't done a rewatch like many people have did during the pandemic. And people have been incredibly critical of the show since rewatching it, in the sense of understanding that they put these young, vulnerable women eventually men, but at the, you know, for the first, you know, the show ran for 10 years and 24 seasons, I think. And they put these young, vulnerable women and eventually men through the ringer, making them take part in challenges that were completely and utterly outlandish. You know, there's an interview in here with Dionne Walters. She was in Cycle 8. They made her pose in a photo shoot that was glamorizing violence, where she had a bullet shot in her head and she had to do model posing while a photographer was taking this, and her mother had been shot and paralyzed in her youth. You know, they brought on eating disorders. They brought on they were very questionable in their filming of girls under the influence and relationships that they may have had with models in Italy and so on and so forth. So Tyra Banks, who kind of made her name internationally through this show and obviously made a huge amount of money from it as well, has been sort of recast in this villain role. And she is a very game participant in this three-part documentary. Now, I will say, if you are looking for the kind of juicy gossip on America's Next Top Model, there's plenty to be had here. But this is not the kind of like trial by documentary some viewers would be hoping for, because Tyra is, I mean, she's sort of like brazenly unafraid to admit, yeah, like, yeah, I did this. I thought I was doing the right thing, but, you know, looking back, maybe it wasn't great, but I don't care. I've moved on. And they gather all together, you know, they gather everyone you would expect if you watch the show, that is all of the other judges, the two J's, Mr. J, Miss J, Nigel Barker, who was this hunky renowned fashion photographer who has absolutely nothing interesting to say. Like, turns out he's a very handsome man, but not the most interesting talking head.
That surprises me. Yeah, handsome men are usually super intelligent as well.
And it explores the role that reality TV played in the early 2000s. And like, obviously, you know, when I was sitting down watching this, I was thinking about, like, you know, in 2046, are we going to be looking back at the Great British Bake Off?
My fingers were burned.
Right. As unfavorably as we look back at things from the 2000s. No, but probably shows like Love Island will reach, you know, a pinnacle of disaster that we look back very unfondly at. So yeah, all in, if you enjoyed America's Next Top Model, there is something to see here. But this is part of this, and particularly Netflix rehashed recycling of 20-year kind of drama, right? Like, we've already had from them in the last year, Fit for TV, a show about The Biggest Loser. We had Jerry Springer, Fights, Camera, Action, which are all telling the same kind of story.
Yeah.
Look how cruel reality TV was in the early 2000s, and let's feel better about ourselves now that we kind of vaguely recognize that. And look, there is something in that, but like, trust me, people were making these shows on YouTube channels like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
With less of a budget, all in.
Probably still are. Well, then why did Tyra Banks take part in it?
I guess there's probably some image control of her brand and her legacy. Like, Tyra, ANTM, as it was known, has shut down as an entity. I don't think any of the franchises are running internationally anymore. But Tyra Banks herself still has gone on to work as a presenter in the US. She has businesses. She famously has last year launched a hot ice cream brand, and she got the word smize in the dictionary. So she knows how to brand herself, and this is part of the rebranding of her image. Does she come out from it very badly? Like, I mean, certainly she doesn't come out of it favorably. And when, you know, when we get to the final of the three parts and we learn about the implosion of her relationship with the other judges, that's perhaps more interesting than, it's kind of churlish to say, than the advantage taken of the contestants. But, you know, she worked with these guys for years and years and years and then kicks them to the curb. And that's perhaps the most juicy, interesting part for me as a viewer. The models themselves talk about how they, you know, even the winners didn't have much of a career after the show. If anything, it was it was like being covered with the reality TV grease that they couldn't shake off. And the model, you know, and the fashion industry actually had zero interest in hiring them at all. So all in, the show was a complete catastrophe, and I have no doubt that they're going to reboot it at some point.
Okay, so all these people were sold to pop, really, in terms
completely
of...
Completely and utterly, yeah.
Yeah. Crikey. Right, we'll move on to our third show. It's called Small Profits. It begins tonight at 10 p.m. on BBC Two. Here's a clip.
We don't encourage people to be creative here. Take the paint mixing service, for example. People think they're making something unique, but really, we're only allowed to mix them in one of a dozen different ways. You see, we can't run the risk of a customer accidentally discovering a brand new colour, copywriting it, and then going on to make millions, like what happened in the United States of America.
Somebody discovered a new colour. Well, what's it called?
Frelipo.
Frelipo?
Probably.
Well, what's it look like?
now you're asking. It's a kind of a very dark sort of white.
Right, that was Small Profits. It actually doesn't start tonight. It started last week. I'm getting everything wrong. This and Cara Daniel, I don't know. I can't go on anymore. Anyway, is this kind of Office territory we're in, James?
No. Now, it does come from Mackenzie Crook, who people will remember from his seminal role as Garth in the two seasons and specials of The Office. I mean, 25 years ago at this point. Hmm. So, like, all in, he then went on to star in a few of the Pirates of the Caribbean show. And then he made Detectress about, I think, 11 years ago, which was this very charming, offbeat little sitcom about two friends, a metal detector, who went looking for things. And this is his newest show. It stars Pierce Quigley, who is not an actor I'm very familiar with, but he did have a supporting role in Detectorist. He plays Michael Sleep, who we heard in the clip there, this kind of sardonic, unhappy in his life guy. He's in his, you know, he's in his middle, well into his middle age, and he is working in a kind of B&Q type hardware store. Mm. And unhappy in life because on Christmas Eve, 7 years ago, his girlfriend, Clea, disappeared, and he just has never been able to get over this. She disappeared from the face of the earth. No one knows where she is, and he just can't get over it. And he's sad and he's lonely.
Disappeared in a kind of call the police way, or disappeared as I'm going out for a slice pan and doesn't come back?
Both.
Oh, right. Okay.
And all in, this does not sound like the grounds for a classic sitcom, right? Yeah. Well, let me make it even weirder. So Michael Palin plays his father, Brian, who then encourages him to use a family recipe to create some homunculi. So I don't know those either, but homunculi are basically an alchemical, you know, if you followed alchemy way back when, you could produce in glass bottles these three kind of creatures who would then help you to predict the future. So he goes into his garden shed and decides he's going to try and produce these homunculi in order to get to the bottom of the mystery. And into this comes his friendship with one of his colleagues. She's played by Lauren Patel. Her name is Casey in the show. They have this lovely offbeat friendship while they try to create these creatures. Now, it is a weird, odd show.
Yeah.
But everything is played absolutely and utterly straight. I mean, this is like magical non-realism or whatever, magical realism through and through, completely and utterly. We are just are accepting that there are these glass jars filled with these weird creatures who are able to tell the future. And you just got to go with it.
Okay.
It is really offbeat, as I said, but very charming, very funny. The comedy is witty and clever and interesting. The performance by Pierce Quigley is absolutely brilliant. I mean, I think like this is the kind of thing that'll sneak into a BAFTA, you know, win at some point down the line. But all in, get in now while the going is good, because it's early days in this show and it's an unusual, weird little comedy, but it's very funny.
Okay, yeah. But might be a still retain a kind of a niche type thing.
Oh, yeah. Really. Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. Seamus says, I watched the Belfast show. It's grand. I thought it would be funnier. Could be done in less episodes, in my opinion.
I would agree with that completely. Yeah.
There were so many shows from back then. The Swan, The Biggest Loser, Big Brother, how Simon Cowell spoke to everyone in the early years of pop stars. I understand it was a different time and I watched all of them and thought nothing of it then. When we look back at it in today's world, it's shameful. A great podcast called Reality Bites gives an insight into this, and looking back, it's shocking. The Swan literally encouraged women to have plastic surgery, and it had an Irish TV presenter. Actually, that was Amanda Byram. Now, in fairness, I don't think it was Amanda Byram's idea personally to get them to do all that. She was probably just, you know, being told to say that. Wasn't there a five-part show on teenage TV and the pitfalls that always came their way, including Joss Whedon, says Kev. There was, I think. You did. You think? I think you talked
about. Oh, there was Danger on Set. It's actually, but it's not about Joss Whedon. It's about this Nickelodeon guy whose name I can't remember. But,
yes, yeah.
Like, he's the Nickelodeon guy in charge of like every kid show from the early 2000s. Danger on Set is a very good documentary. Yeah.
Yeah. But as you say, yeah, I wonder in 20 years' time. Oh, my God. The Late Late Show, the abuse I endured. Right, those three shows are How to Get to Heaven from Belfast. You can stream the entire first episode season now on Netflix. Reality Check, Inside America's Next Top Model. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix as well. And Small Profits, that's on Monday nights at 10 p.m. on BBC Two. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2. On News Talk. Conversation that counts.